I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with this worldwide news update. The U.S. House of Representatives on Wednesday passed a bill to require the detainment of unauthorized migrants accused of theft and violent crimes. It marks the first legislation that President Donald Trump can sign as Congress, with some bipartisan support, swiftly moved in line with his plans to crack down on illegal immigration. The Lake and Riley Act is named after a nursing student who was murdered last year by a Venezuelan man. The bill requires a massive ramp up in U.S. immigration and customs enforcement's capabilities, but does not include any new funding. Meanwhile, the new president has launched a slew of executive orders intended to seal off the border with Mexico to immigration and ultimately deport millions of migrants without permanent legal status in the U.S. Trump has also canceled refugee resettlement, and his administration has signaled intentions to prosecute local law enforcement officials who do not enforce his new immigration policies. The Pentagon said Wednesday it has begun deploying U.S. active duty troops to help secure the southern border. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
There are no active duty forces working along the border right now. Officials say up to 1,500 may be sent there to join the roughly 2,500 National Guard and Reserve forces who are there. They're expected to support Border Patrol agents with things like logistics, transportation, and barrier construction, similar to what they've done in the past under both the Trump and Biden administrations. It's unclear if they'll end up doing law enforcement, which would put U.S. forces in a dramatic new role unseen in recent history. Sagar Magani, Washington.
This is VOA News. An extremist group leader who orchestrated part of the assault on the U.S. Capitol 4 years ago defended his role in the attack as he returned to the scene of the crime on Wednesday. AP correspondent Haya Panjwani reports.
Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes, the far-right extremist group leader convicted of seditious conspiracy in the January 6th, 2021 attack, has visited Capitol Hill after President Trump commuted his 18-year prison sentence. Rhodes was convicted in one of the most serious cases brought by the Justice Department over the riot that left more than 100 police officers injured. Rhodes' appearance came the day after he was released from prison as a result of Trump's order of clemency, benefiting the more than 1,500 people charged with federal crimes in the January 6th attack. Meanwhile, the Proud Boys' former top leader, Enrique Tarrio, and three of his lieutenants were also convicted of seditious conspiracy in the attack. Tarrio was serving a 22-year prison sentence, the longest of any Capitol riot case, before Trump pardoned him. He came home to cheers when he landed at a Miami airport. Haya Panjwani, Washington.
Experts say the extraordinary reversal for rioters who committed both violent and nonviolent crimes 4 years ago will only embolden extremist groups who have openly called for political violence. Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner reports.
House Speaker Mike Johnson on Wednesday defended President Donald Trump's sweeping pardon of January 6 rioters, referring to the 2021 attack as a, quote, peaceful protest. This despite 140 police officers suffering injuries on January 6th, and one who died the next day after fighting the rioters. House Democratic Caucus Chair Pete Aguilar said the pardons posed a danger to public safety.
These violent offenders are roaming the streets because Donald Trump took these actions.
Chad Allen Goldberg, professor of sociology at the University of Wisconsin.
What we see, if anything, is a deepening of that partisan divide around January 6th, the deepening division about what it means and how we should understand it. I think that is going to grow.
Among the people he pardoned were more than 300 who pleaded guilty to either assaulting or obstructing law enforcement, including 69 who admitted to assaulting police with a dangerous or deadly weapon. Some political extremism experts said the pardons would incentivize pro-Trump vigilantes to commit violence, under the belief they'll receive legal immunity if they act in the interests of Trump.
Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Few alternatives for UN funding as the U.S. withdraws support.
Our tax dollars should not be complicit in propping up entities that are counter to American interests, anti-Semitic, or engaging in fraud, corruption, or terrorism.
Botswana closes doors on foreign teachers and truck drivers. Misinformation deepens the divides in Burkina Faso. Zambia's information minister accuses opposition parties of plotting to smear the country's international reputation. The new leader of Tanzania's main opposition vows to introduce and adhere to term limits.
My vision for reintroduction of term limits is to set 2 5-year terms for our national leaders.
Those stories plus our special Thursday morning Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Following President Donald Trump's announcement that the U.S. will withdraw from the World Health Organization, the United States is expected to reduce funding to other U.N. agencies. As White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadekuswara reports, other wealthy nations are unlikely to fill the gap.
Lean times are ahead for the United Nations as the United States withdraws from international commitments, including its membership in the World Health Organization. WHO spokesperson Tarek Jasarevic.
It was 18% of the budget in 2023. And as I said, the U.S. is the largest single donor.
On Monday, his first day in office, President Donald Trump signed various executive orders, including one to exit the U.S. from the U.N.'s Paris Agreement, an international climate accord.
The United States will not sabotage our own industries while China pollutes. With impunity.
The U.S. is the world's biggest producer of fossil fuels that cause global warming. It's also the largest financial contributor to the U.N. In her Senate confirmation hearing Tuesday, Trump's nominee for U.N. Ambassador Elise Stefanik said that the children's agency UNICEF and the World Food Program are effective U.N. agencies. However, funding for others will be cut, including for UNRWA, the agency that helps Palestinian refugees.
Our tax dollars should not be complicit in propping up entities that are counter to American interests, anti-Semitic, or engaging in fraud, corruption, or terrorism.
When Trump reduced funding for many UN agencies in 2017 during his first term, European Union countries stepped up financially. But now they're focused on defense spending to help Ukraine push back against Russia's invasion, in part because of Trump's skepticism toward aid for Kyiv, French President Emmanuel Macron.
Now that the new administration in the United States has taken office, it is more important than ever for Europeans, for our two countries, France and Germany, to play their full part in consolidating a united, strong and sovereign Europe.
Meanwhile, China is unlikely to expand its UN funding, said Richard Gowan, UN director of the International Crisis Group, via Skype.
Chinese officials are also realistic that their country is facing some economic headwinds, and they don't have lots of spare money to throw around. So I'm afraid that there is no obvious alternative funder for the UN to turn to.
This is the second time Trump pulled the U.S. out of the 2015 Paris Agreement that aims to keep global warming below 2 degrees Celsius from pre-industrial levels by slashing planet warming carbon emissions. Trump's successor in 2021, President Joe Biden, had the U.S. rejoin the Paris Agreement on his first day in office. Analysts said shifting U.S. positions may make other countries take their climate commitments less seriously. Sheila Olmsted, Cornell University professor who studies the economic dimensions of environmental policies, via Skype.
We have less emissions reduction in China or less emissions reduction right in other countries of the world. Those countries, right, failing to reduce emissions as a part, right, reflecting on the U.S. example, will create damages that will affect the U.S. economy, right? The damages are global.
Climate activists protested Trump's decision. Once the withdrawal takes effect next year, the U.S. joins Iran, Libya, and Yemen as the only U.N. countries not part of the climate agreement. Patsy Wida Huswara, VOA News, Washington.
Tanzania's main opposition Chadema Party has elected Tundu Lissu as its chairman. Lissu served as deputy to Freeman Mbowe, who held the position for 21 years. He has pledged reconciliation and the rebuilding of the party. Lissu also says he will introduce and adhere to term limits, advocate for a new national constitution, and create an independent electoral system.
For Chadema to come a major force in Tanzanian politics for years to come, and for that to happen, we have to rediscover our roots. We have to rediscover our mission, which was always fight for democracy, fight for human rights, fight for freedom, justice, and human development.
What do you make of term limits now? How long do you hope to serve?
I mission for the reintroduction of term limit is to set 2 5-year terms for our national leaders, and that is to say the party national chairman, 2 vice chairmen, as well as the secretary general and members of his secretariat. This was the state of affairs when the party was first registered in the early 90s. It was scrapped in 2006, and now with the massive growth of the party across the country, it is time to introduce the term limit in order to control some of the maladies which are emerging as a result of the growth of the party. They're beginning to see people who hang on power long after their time was overdue, as it were. Reintroduction of term limit to 2 5-year terms will be enough for that. We also see a situation where we will introduce term limits of members of parliament who represent women in Tanzanian parliament in the local government system of Tanzania. Since special seats for women were first reserved in the early 90s, no term limit was ever passed for their service in parliament. As a result, we have women who are serving in parliament 30 years and so on. When the original rationale for special seats was to give women the opportunity to learn, gain experience in the running of our parliament and local government, it was not intended to create a prince and royalties in our parliament for those women. We introduce term limit in order to make sure that there are opportunities for more women to enjoy the benefits of the reservation of special seats for them.
Mr. Lissu, what is your vision for Tanzania now?
My vision for Tanzania has not changed. It is a country that respects its citizens, enjoys viable democratic system of government, fundamental human rights of its citizens, and that lives in peace with its neighbors and the wider world.
You and I, we have spoken on many occasions, and your main concern has been a demand for a new constitution and electoral reform. How far do you hope to go on these demands?
Our party has resolved in our recent reform of our electoral system. There is no point in continuing in elections which we know are rigged well in advance. We know that their results are preordained. Our clarion call from now on is no reform, no election.
What does that mean?
It means that we will fight for reform, and if there is no reform, we don't see why it has to be election.
What would Chadema do if the current government, President Samia Suluhu Hassan, does not give in to your demands?
We'll continue pushing as long as it takes to ensure that we get what the country has long deserved.
There is election this year in Tanzania. Do you plan to run for the presidency?
No reform, no election, my friend.
Tundu Lissu is the new chair of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dar es Salaam. To Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 23rd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Z
Zambia's information minister has accused opposition political parties of plotting to smear the country's international reputation by fabricating claims of human rights abuses. The secretary general of the main opposition Patriotic Front Party, Raphael Nakasinda, wrote to the international community last week accusing the government of harassing the opposition. But information minister Cornelius Mwitwa tells me the allegations are dirty and harmful to the progress of the Zambian government is making.
The information is based on a write-up by one of the senior members of the former ruling party, urging youth across the country, urging women, urging former ministers, permanent secretaries, and all the diversity of people to come up together to generate email messages to inundate the inbox for the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights, who is currently in Zambia visiting and even offering doing a template for which others would now find it easy just to copy what would have already been designed as a scheme to tarnish a good image and human rights record of the new donor administration of President Hakainde Hichilema.
The allegations here is that your government is arresting many opposition members. And here is the claim that you are doing so, according to the allegation, to demoralize the opposition ahead of the 2026 election.
That is a very, very simple and straightforward issue. I would like to place myself on record that there is no single opposition leader who has been arrested in Zambia on the basis of political retribution or political persecution. Zero. None. Anybody who has graced the doorsteps of the police station or the courts of law or indeed prison has violated the law to do with cyberbullying, to do with defamation, insulting people on social media, which provided by law in pursuant to the fact that where my human rights end, yours begin. Number two, anybody, particularly political leaders, who has appeared before the police court or may be destined to prison, is involved in allegations of corruption, abuse of public resources, or outright theft. I want to indicate here that one of the key tenets of good governance is the supremacy of the law, where the law is above everybody, every citizen, every person, and all of us are equal before the law.
Minister, as I saw the release they put out, and they have a whole list of members of the opposition Patriotic Front Party. They highlight particularly the case of Mombi Piri. They go on to list as many as maybe 10 to 13 people. What has become of the case of this individual? Have they been brought before a court of
competent jurisdiction? Thank you very much. The people who are arrested, not for corruption or theft, are just very few. They are actually a handful, less than 10. And these are mainly to do with insulting via social media. Number one, I must state here that it's untraditional and un-African to insult elders. And also, it is a criminal, according to our statutes, for one to insult another person. Now, a few of those colleagues they are referring to in that write-up have been directly insulting the head of state in a manner you wouldn't want to be repeated for your hearing. And that is against our laws.
Cornelius Mwitwa is the Zambia's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. Botswana authorities say they will no longer issue work permits to foreign teachers and truck drivers in order to protect local jobs. Botswana's stable economy has attracted migrant workers, the majority fleeing hardships in neighboring Zimbabwe. From Haburuni, Ngudise Dube has the story.
A group of unemployed teachers protested in Haburuni this week, demanding the government stop issuing work permits to foreign educators. Addressing the teachers, Pass Mukhwari, the Minister of Labour and Home Affairs, said the government is already doing what the teachers have asked for. He says What we have done is that we are no longer issuing work permits to teachers and truck drivers. Last month, we rejected 140 applications for work permits. We have enough local teachers. Tabang Kopelo, representing the unemployed teachers, says they want the new government, which came into office in October, to go a step further.
We now demand the cancellation and the immediate suspension of issuing of work permits to teachers who come from outside Botswana. We do so not because we don't love them. We are saying there are thousands and thousands of which others are graduating. Therefore, they will need to occupy that space.
Kopelo says their actions must not be mistaken for xenophobia, but a plea to the government to prioritize citizens in the employment of educators.
If at all we were to be perceived as xenophobic, I think we would be saying to the government that you must remove all these people here, take them back home, they must leave our jobs. Like, we would be aggressive, like you see that, like the approach that is usually seen in other countries that I can't name, whereby now they are now being attacked, derogatory language is being used against them. So we are not moving in that approach because we know that we are fellow brothers and sisters.
In neighboring South Africa, clashes between migrants and locals have often turned deadly, with citizens arguing foreigners are taking away their jobs. Habron-based Congolese teacher Patrice Okomi says there is not much they can do except abide by the host government's regulations.
We are at the mercy of the government, and it is entirely up to the Botswana authorities to decide our future. And if the feeling is that we have overstayed our welcome, then there's not much we can do except to prepare for our exit.
According to figures from the government office, Statistics Botswana, there are 4,581 foreign work permit holders in Botswana, with expatriate teachers comprising 18% of the total. Mqondisi Dube, VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
From security to politics, the spread of false information is constant threat in Burkina Faso. Gildas Dar has a look at the problem.
A show of unity between Burkina Faso's foreign affairs minister and Chinese ambassador in October. A fabricated story had falsely claimed the two countries has broken relations. Minister Karamoko Jean-Marie Traoré called the story diplomatic sabotage. On social media and in WhatsApp groups, false information is a constant trap. Jordan Meda is the editorial director at the local fact-checking platform FasoCheck. He says there are two types. Misinformation is shared without the intention to cause harm.
On the other hand, there is what we call disinformation, which is the creation and spread of false content with the clear intent to deceive a community or individual and cause harm to a person, cause, or institution.
At L'Observateur Palga, one of the leading daily newspapers in Burkina Faso, journalist Hugues Sama says his group is taking the problem seriously.
Even a trained eye can be fooled. So what L'Observateur does is provide context on every piece of information we receive. We must also verify it.
When military leader Ibrahim Traoré disappeared from public view for a few days in June, speculation and fabricated videos were rife on social media. Skilled fact-checkers were able to set the record straight. But these incidents are damaging, say experts.
For a citizen to be well-informed, they must have access to balanced and accurate information. When they are overwhelmed by fake news, they don't have all the necessary information to have an enlightened view of national life. This is a problem.
La nation, cela pose problème. Meda says world powers are vying for influence across the Sahel and promoting their own narratives. But he says they are not alone.
Internally, you also have groups of people who, convinced of their beliefs, spread false narratives. They broadcast them and people believe them.
Ils le diffusent, les gens y croient.
Analysts caution that ongoing conflict in Burkina Faso is intensifying the spread of false information, MEDA says that advancements in technology are likely to amplify the reach and impact of misinformation, making their efforts even more essential. Gildas Da, VOA Africa, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
South Sudanese authorities have ordered Telecom to block access to social media for at least 30 days. They cite concerns over the dissemination of graphic content relating to the ongoing violence against South Sudanese in neighboring Sudan. The Associated Press reports that the temporary ban, which could be extended to up to 90 days, will come into force at midnight on Thursday, according to a directive from the National Communication Authority to telecom companies. Niger's defense minister says the junta-led West African countries of Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali have created a joint force that will soon be deployed in the restive Sahel region against rising extremist violence, according to the Associated Press. Salifu Moudi said Wednesday that the force of 5,000 personnel will be posted in the three countries. He says some joint operations have already taken place. It's time now for a special Thursday morning Daybreak Africa edition. And here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
James will begin the sport in Tanzania, where JKT Queens were crowned champions of the inaugural CAF Under 17 Girls Integrated Football Tournament, GIFT Tanzania 2025, on Saturday, following a 2-1 victory over compatriots TDS Girls in Dar es Salaam. The Tanzanian duo closed the hugely successful tournament with a thrilling final in which JKT Queens came out on top thanks to a brace from Winfrida Gerald. The CAF Under 17 GIFT tournament was introduced as a pilot project in the East African region to diversify the football offering on the continent and promote the emergence of new talent. Staying with CAF competition, South Africa's Orlando Pirates delivered a stunning 2-1 defeat to Egypt's Al Ahly at the Cairo International Stadium, clinching top spot in Group C of the CAF Champions League competition. Despite the loss, Al Ahly, led by Marcel Koller, advanced as group runners-up with 10 points, while Orlando Pirates topped the group with 14 points. Earlier in the day, MC Alger secured their place in the CAF Champions League quarterfinals following a goalless draw against Young Africans in Tanzania on Saturday. The Algerian side needed just a point to join already qualified Al Hilal in the knockout stages, and their professional display saw them finish second in Group A with 9 points. Tunisian giants Osporons, along with Pyramids FC of Egypt, concluded their CAF Champions League group stages with commanding victories on Saturday evening as they both advanced to the quarterfinals. Last season's runners up, Esperance put four past Angola's Sagrada Esperanca in a one-sided 4-1 victory in Tunis, while Pyramids, who just like Esperance had already secured their place in the knockout stages, thrashed Djoliba 6-0 to cap what has been an exceptional group stage campaign for the Egyptians. Staying with football news, Rwanda will host the 2025 Arsenal Africa Fans Festival from April 18th to the 20th. The sixth edition of the festival will see the English Premier League club fans raise money for charity while having fun engaging in other sports and providing an opportunity to showcase Rwanda as a tourist destination. So far, Rwanda, South Sudan, Ghana, Nigeria, Kenya, Uganda, Zambia, and Tanzania have confirmed their participation. For more than 5 years, Rwanda has sponsored the Premier League giants through the Visit Rwanda initiative. In athletics, Olympic champion Lesile Thibogo will launch his Wanda Diamond League campaign at the season opener in Xiamen on the 26th of April. Botswana's Thibogo secured the 200 meters title at Olympic Games, and his Diamond League season saw him win 200 meters races in Monaco, Lausanne, Silese, and Zurich, as well as the 100 meters in Rome. He then finished second in the 200 meters final in Brussels. And that does it for this edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. And that's it for this Thursday, January 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington saying, have a great day and please be safe whatever you do.